Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 135, Databases, DBAs, and Backups. Can't we all just get along? My guest today is Alan Hurt. Alan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, and how about you?
Hey, I am doing good. I am here in Columbus, Ohio on a beautiful summer day. Need to apologize for the listeners. It's been a while. We've been busy here at Veeam, and happy to revive the podcast, and I got a great topic. So, you know, SQL Server databases, it's something we all, you know, touch, and I spend myself kind of fishing a lot over in the SQL Help Twitter hashtag, I guess is the best way to describe it. And there's this guy that just keeps popping up, and that's Alan Hurt, SQLHA on Twitter. Also, SQLHA.com is the blog. Dual MVP, VMware vExpert, SQL Server Availability, HADR Expert, smart guy is the takeaway. Other than that, Alan, introduce yourself and tell the listeners kind of what you do and all that.
Sure. So I got my start way back in the early 90s while I was in college, actually. I interned at a company called SQL Solutions, which got then bought by Sybase. And so basically I've been using relational databases ever since. I've used every version of SQL Server that Microsoft has put out for Windows. I always have to qualify that because there was no S2 version of SQL Server. But I've sort of seen a lot over the past roughly 25 plus years in this industry. The funny thing is it all sort of repeats itself in different ways. It's just sort of variations on the same riff and theme. I got into the, sort of all the availability stuff. Late 90s, I worked at a company where we were using things like the Wolfpack, which is the beta that became the clustering stuff in Windows. So I've been doing all this high availability disaster recovery stuff for a really long time as well. So between the SQL Server and the infrastructure stuff, there's not much I probably haven't seen or heard at this point.
Outstanding. That's an incredible resume in the sense of your depth in the field is truly, truly complete. And, you've seen SQL Server change a lot, I take it, right?
It has, but, you know, the fundamentals are still the same, which is one of the reasons we're talking today, which is obviously backup and restore. Going back to even the Sybase days, really, for me, any availability strategy starts with a great backup and recovery or restore, depending on what you want to call it, strategy. If you don't have that, I don't care what else you're using. Failover cluster instances, availability groups, any third-party features at a platform layer. If you don't have a solid backup and restore strategy, you don't have anything.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's fundamental to what Veeam thinks. And I sometimes find myself educating people on why they need a certain type of backup. And sometimes it's not even a Veeam backup, by the way. I frequently tell people about SQL Server agent jobs or maintenance plans as something that a DBA might need to help them out with. And if they look at me with a lot of questions, then that indicates that they really need help. But what I find, though, is that there's this disconnect. And you talked about it, that it's happened time and time again, different products, but it's kind of the same thing. And it's there's databases, which are a different type of data and system. They shouldn't get backed up the exact same way as everything else. But in your practice, you know, what do you see as one of the consistent problems with how people take databases in regards to their backup DR availability strategy? What's the common theme that you see messed up?
Well, I think we need to take a half a step back and just talk about basics. So in these database world, and this would generally apply no matter what database solution you're using, SQL Server, Oracle, Sybase, whatever. From a sort of relational database engine perspective, if you will, we generally refer to things, you have overall SLAs, but really backup strategies boil down to your requirements. And requirements specifically in the database world tend to revolve around recovery time objectives, or RTOs, and RPOs, which are recovery point objectives. Now, recovery time objective is exactly what it sounds like. How long do you have to get something back up and running? the challenge there that you have is it's never just, say, SQL Server that you're getting up and running more often than not in a true disaster scenario. It's also your OS, SQL Server itself. It's not just your user databases, right? Mm-hmm. And then on the data side, where your user databases come in, your application databases, we have recovery point objectives, which is just that, you know, to what point do we need to get it to? Now, the business, as you're negotiating these things, and they should be documented, are always going to say, well, we can't have any data loss. In my experience, that's not always true. In fact, in most cases, it's not true if you scratch under the surface. But you can't devise a backup and recovery strategy without knowing those things. So that's sort of problem number one. Then, as sort of time has evolved, back in the good old days when DBAs were more like just operators, right, and they were just managing sort of the processes of SQL Server, and at most maybe they were doing index rebuilds, so what I would call the traditional old school DBA. I mean, they were making the backups, they were doing everything. Now DBA has a very wide range of responsibilities, much more than just, say, operational duties. But as also time has evolved, the platforms have changed. You know, so combine this with recoverability, we've gone to the world of virtualization and being in the public cloud where we have virtual machines and we have all these lovely technologies and features and these things where, oh, hey, I want to do, again, another overused word, snapshot and be able to recover my VM. But what does that mean when you have, say, SQL Server running inside of it, right? How does that sort of fit into the picture? And the biggest problem I see now, especially in those types of environments, is that you want, or the company and the IT folks tend to want to have a single solution, say, to back up and potentially restore everything. That's where things like Veeam come in or other backup solutions. Sometimes it's the right solution, sometimes it's not the right solution, to your point of you don't always necessarily say it's Veeam, right? Mm-hmm. So this is the challenge I have, is when you have data professionals in your organization, I hate to say DBAs at this point, and you have backup admins or Windows admins or whoever's responsible on the other side, and they kind of have to duke it out for who's responsible. And for me, what I always say to folks is, at the end of the day, if you're in a server down situation and you have to have somebody restore your databases, who's responsible? Mm-hmm. If it's your DBAs, they ultimately should have final say, or most of the final say, of the solution. And if it's not the DBAs and somebody else is going to own it, then the DBAs may step out of it, but then it causes other problems, as people are still going to go to the DBAs and blame them if stuff goes wrong. And that's a big part of the challenge here.
You know, this sounds a lot like building a DR plan, you know, from a traditional sense, in that who's in charge of what, who does what if there's a problem, what is covered in DR, what is not covered in DR. But it's almost like a micro example. And what I mean by this is I see this happen all the time, Alan. I talk to organizations that, you know, sure, I talk to them in the course of Veeam, but I think I uncover this problem no matter what they're doing. Okay, so in Oracle, like, for example, I don't know if you play with that. In fact, the worst thing I ever did, this is kind of funny, we had some Oracle support at Veeam that started a few years ago. The worst thing I ever did was go into Oracle knowing a little bit about SQL Server. Because they're so different. I don't know if you've played with that much.
Yeah, so in my earlier parts of my career, I did Oracle, Sybase, and SQL Server simultaneously. So I haven't touched Oracle in a long time, but I still remember the fundamental concepts. And I sort of have some of the same problem where you have shops that have Oracle and, say, SQL Server. They'll call a database one thing, and in the SQL Server world, it means something totally different.
Exactly.
So you sort of have to map that for folks sometimes, and it's always interesting.
And I find that organizations have that disconnect where they don't exactly know what they want. They may or may not have talked to the business to identify what those RTOs and RPOs should be, because that's really the expectation of the company. And the other thing is it's kind of like watching a commercial for a car, you know. MSRP is this, but as shown is all the way up at the top. Of course, you know, the business is going to want the highest level of capability or no data loss and full-blown DR for everything, right? But I challenge that we could probably do most of that for almost everything today. I mean, it's just everything's solvable by money and resources, bandwidth and storage. But the reality is, I think that organizations just need to be in touch and consistent and all on the same page, besides the backup admin, the server admin, storage and virtualization platform, and then I like your term, data managers. DBA might be a kind of a deprecated term, but when it comes to these workloads that in my experience matches yours in the sense that that disconnect really comes down to who doesn't or who wants to, I should say, take that responsibility if there is a server down event on being the one that's in charge of getting it back. And you can have a team effort to keep it available. You can have a team effort to bring it back, but there has to be kind of a clear line of responsibility. Okay, if there's no server, you know, at least for the way most on-premises database works now, there's no database to be run, right? So we have to have that back first. And I always throw out to customers this one question. I ask, who owns the logs? And they might look at me a little funny, not for, and if they don't understand it, that tells me they probably don't have a data manager in the mix. But I always ask that question, you know, and not all the admins in the world get how logs work. They can grow out of control. A lot of times you need them if you're in a reconstruction event. And from there, you can go a lot of different ways. You know, just for the listeners, what can you tell us about logs? I mean, that cool. Central question, what do you think about my logic there?
Maybe a little faulty, especially in the SQL Server world, because, well, I'd say generally in the relational database world, because Oracle has, you know, their version of logs, right? In SQL Server, we have the transaction log, and you have one per database. You can have multiple data files, but generally you only have a single transaction log, and I'm not going to get into the where's and why's in this podcast. Now, think of the SQL Server transaction log as keeping a record of all the inserts, updates, and deletes that happen. And how much gets logged is to a degree controlled by the what's called the recovery model in SQL Server. Mm-hmm. Now, back in the old days, there used to be this option prior to SQL Server 2000 called truncate log on checkpoint, which basically gave you no recovery. And basically, as if you just didn't care, it just would basically truncate the log and basically deal with stuff. So while it may grow to a point and then truncate itself, whatever. Like, truncate log on checkpoint just isn't an option now. Now, what we really need to talk about really is that the log will always grow. It doesn't matter what recovery model you have. But in simple, basically just wraps around and you can't use things like transaction logs. You're only as good as your full backup. In bulk logged and full, and the default is full recovery mode, You need to do things like make transaction log backups to flush out the transaction log records, if you will, that have been already committed, right? And there are things that can prevent log records from getting committed, such as if you're in the middle of a long-running transaction, whatever. But from a recoverability standpoint, when we're talking about RPOs and needing shorter RPOs, you absolutely need to have T-log backups. Now, the thing is, right, if you do certain things in SQL Server, like there is an option, for example, if you back up to a null device, NUL, that will break the log chain, which means if you went to go use a full backup and, say, some transaction logs, at some point, if you did that backup to null, it's going to break that, and you can only recover to a certain point, and you're back to – you're only as good as your last full backup. So backup to null is very dangerous. Now, that is one of your options, and in my mind, a little wrongly worded in your UI, but that's okay. Your documentation actually calls it out, which I found, which is good, actually. So but the thing is, if you're not a SQL Server professional or somebody who deals with SQL Server or understands that, They could select your, say, truncate logs thing but break your RPO, right, could totally make it void. So it's one of these things where the transaction log is super important for SQL Server user databases. It's a matter of how important is it to the business, and what are your RPOs? Now, you know, let's put this in perspective. If this is a user application that's used twice a year where the data really isn't growing or changing that much, you may not have a super low RPO, and you may not need to make transaction log backups all the time. And maybe if you only make a full backup when the data changes. I don't know. I mean, I'm just giving you an example. But if you have a database that's changing all the time, you're probably going to be at a minimum doing T-log backups every 15 minutes, maybe less. That depends on a bunch of factors. So breaking that log chain also breaks things like availability groups, because, and even though it's deprecated database mirroring, if you're using log shipping. So all these features within SQL Server break if you break the log chain. So maintaining that log chain in SQL Server is really important. And what SQL Server does underneath the covers, there's something called the log sequence number that's assigned basically to these records in the transaction log. And those have to all be sequential. And if SQL Server detects that something's funky, it's going to go, hey, I was expecting LSN 12345. Instead, I got 12346. Mm-hmm. Right. So SQL Server knows when something's not quite right. And that, to me, is sort of the problem with a lot of these third-party backup tools and some of the options. It's not so much that there is a backup to null option. It's that people setting them don't necessarily understand its implications. And if there are data professionals who are responsible for the RPO, but say the person using the third-party backup tool, no matter what it is, set something and breaks that, it affects everyone, you know, sort of in that chain, if you will, right? So it's one of these things that a little education goes a long way.
Well, I learned a little bit there, too, and that's really helpful because, you know, I do have, and you corrected me on Twitter a couple months ago, which led to this conversation, I have used that deprecated term of truncation, right? Which, did I hear you right that it's been gone since SQL 2000?
Well, no. Well, so the thing is, they use it, so in the SQL Server documentation, they talk about truncation and flushing of the log. The truncate log on checkpoint option has been gone since SQL Server 2000. So the problem is SQL Server confuses, they'll use truncation, which is correct, because you can then essentially flush, that's why I always use like flush the log, right? Because when you make a T-log backup, you're basically taking those and backing those transactions up to a file. And so if it's not an active transaction and it's been marked as fine, you can flush the log, right? But let me also say this, because a lot of people have the misunderstanding that log truncation, or flushing of the log in this case, makes the T-log smaller. That's not, if your T-log grew to a certain point, it probably grew for a reason. And you can shrink the log, generally a bad thing, again, outside the scope of this podcast. But one of the reasons you do take more frequent transaction log backups is to maintain the size of the T-log in SQL Server. So it has more than just a RPO standpoint. It's also used to make sure your T-log stays relatively static in terms of size.
I like to equate a transaction log loosely, okay? Bear with me. Kind of like to a thin provision virtual disk. They creep up and, you know, you could reclaim, right? And then it's a container, lack of a better word, is a kind of one way to look at a log file with a defined geometry that if it's set to go up, it will. But then that flushing will empty the comments, but that container or the shell of that log file remains in regards to disk geometry. And you can run a report, and it'll tell you how much of that log space is either used or unused. And you can see that for any database log file pretty easily.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the other nice thing is SQL Server, you can set alerts that tell you if your log's getting full. Now, the one thing you have to worry about in conjunction with this as well is that if your physical disk is getting full and the T-log tries to grow and it can't write to the T-log, basically you're in a really bad situation with SQL Server. If you can't write to the T-log, you're basically, you might as well just say you're hosed. So you have to monitor your disk space, as well as, you know, how it's growing. I mean, this is pretty standard stuff, but this is why what we do out there is not always easy, because you have a lot of things you need telemetry on to make sure that your mission critical environments are working properly.
Well, this is one of those reasons why you might have some individuals kind of recommend data volumes or MDF files go on this this drive letter. LDF files, log files go on this drive letter, because we have to monitor both of those different spaces, and both can grow dynamically. And, you know, if they both can increment based on their configuration, whether it's megabytes or percentage, and you want to make sure there's overhead for those growth motions if they need to happen, if it's configured that way. So that's one of the reasons I see a lot of, you know, disk geometries. I won't call it complicated, but it's specific so that it can accommodate that type of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's true to a large degree. But remember, in today's world where we're doing things like virtualization, those are really more logical designations. Mm-hmm. And then it depends where you then create, say, that VNDK or VHDX. And is it on the same CSV, for example, or data store in VMware? Then is it on different data stores, and are those data stores on different physical volumes? I mean, it's all more complex in a way today than it was when we had all physical servers and we kind of knew where stuff's at.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Do you, just as a matter of practice, I'm just curious, I know that, and for the listeners, you know, Alan, by the way, helps organizations out with some of these data challenges, right? He's probably a great resource you guys can reach out to help navigate some of those questions, like what's one way to do it, what's the best way, what are things we might not have been thinking about. But do you also see the value, Alan, in also having an image-based backup? You know, if we've gone down the SQL route with, you know, a maintenance plan or a SQL agent job, which I guess maintenance plan is a current way to do it, where you're having a SQL backup from the SQL application perspective with its logs so that it can be fully reconstructed. Do you also still advise, or depends maybe is a fair answer, also having an image-based backup?
And so one thing I want to say before we get into that, generally I don't recommend maintenance plans. I recommend you do your own stuff, but okay. Maintenance plans are still better than nothing.
Sure.
I'm not that much of a snob. I've honestly softened my stance. Some people probably curse me right now who are listening to this.
Well, it's very passionate. It's you can get in a fight on Twitter real quick with this stuff, guys.
Look, my thing is, as a mission critical guy, I'd rather see you making backups than having none. Sure. And if a maintenance plan gets you there, cool. That's sort of my stance. But in terms of, you know, images, especially when it comes to, like, say, virtual machines, you're right. It's a big – it depends. Now, some of that goes to, like, tier. So if you have a tier 3 VM, again, used twice a year, making that snapshot or going in and quiescing – because back in the day, we used to have to worry about, was the backup software VDI compliant for SQL Server and then using VSS, right? These days, they all kind of do that, so we kind of don't have that worry anymore. But – you know, so you can see the freeze and the thaw on the SQL Server log itself, not the T log, but the SQL Server log. Now, the challenge then is when you have your RTO or to bring everything back, how long is it going to take you, say, to reinstall an OS or something like that and get restore from bare metal with all your databases? You know, like I would say, for example, in the case of clustered configurations, especially things like FCIs or the clustered instances of SQL Server, sometimes it's easier just to rebuild from scratch because you got to worry about things like cluster state and there's a whole bunch of stuff, right? And it also boils down to who, again, is ultimately responsible for SQL Server. If it's the DBAs, then, you know, I would tend to say rebuild tends to be more of a thing. Now, what I generally recommend in a lot of environments, especially more mission-critical ones, is you back up your SQL Server stuff to a folder, whether you copy it to another shared folder or something, depends. But then you have your software like Veeam coming back up that folder periodically. So you can sort of work with these solutions to come up with the best of breed. It's never all or nothing, right? It's never just use, say, Veeam to back up your VM or SQL Server and not worry. You can maybe take combinations of this stuff.
Yeah.
So it, for me, this is why I work with companies to kind of see what's the best way to go about this. And some of it is also taking into account not just who's responsible, but what's their skill level, right? Because if it's overly complicated, it's not going to work either.
You know, on the what I end up advising people, you know, when I have the Veeam conversation, it comes into those tiers, just like you identified, where there might be tier one databases that the only thing I'm doing, if anything, from the Veeam perspective, is picking up the files that have been dropped. Okay, getting those on a different storage, possibly something offline like tape, or to a cloud. Right, because they could reconstruct that if they needed, because it's got the full, I'm looking for the right word, like the white glove treatment from a data professional, you know? And then there's these other tiers where, you know, let a backup app do it completely, right? And that makes more sense for some of those. But I'll be the first to admit, we don't always pick all of those up as a full image, because not every database, and I'll put SQL Server as, you know, from the market at fault. You know, there's a lot more SQL Server out there than people know about, and sometimes it comes embedded with applications. Sometimes it's, you know, dev or lesser important and stuff like that. But Oracle, for example, you don't generally have that by accident. But SQL Server just kind of happens. So that's the way I see it.
No, and I'd agree with that. I mean, obviously, if somebody installs SQL Express or you're right, if it's embedded somewhere and you don't know it's there and there's a database sitting under there and something happens, like on an app server, sure. I mean, this is part of the problem of data professionals, that the good and bad of it is you can run SQL Server and install it, and then the only time the DBAs ever hear about it is when there's a problem and they never set it up, so now they got to get into their control and... it's a whole thing, right? So that's why, for me, all of these solutions aren't all or nothing. It's let's pick the right solution that works, right? And sometimes that's a hybrid of a few different things depending on the tier.
Well, with that, Alan, that's enough for now. And great chat. Hopefully it was enjoyable for you. I know I learned a few things. I really appreciate that. I think I bumped into you at MVP Summit, but, you know, there's so many people it's impossible to keep up. Any closing comments other than just a reminder to check out Alan at SQLHA on Twitter and his blog SQLHA.com.
Well, just thanks for having me. This is a blast, and maybe we can do it again in the future.